everybody. Welcome back to this. I'm your host, Shauna Griffiths, and today's Real Talk is with a real leader who I am so grateful to now call my friend. Tiffany Castagno is an HR specialist, but I love the way you talk about it, Tiffany. And if I'm saying it correctly, transformative curator of culture. So you'll get into that a bit more, but I first have to give a shout out. We actually met each other through a mutual friend, Nikolai, who is the founder of a company called Olay. So thank you, Nikolai, for bringing this absolute ray of light into my world. I know, right? Big hearts for you. And so, Tiffany, thank you so much for making time in your schedule to come and share with us today.
Thank you so much for having me, Shauna. Yes, shout out to Nikolai, who is just an amazing person. Love his partner, business partner, Alex. They're just amazing over there at Olay. And I'm so grateful that this post brought us together. We've become fast friends.
I know, it's so true. And this is actually only the second time we've spoken live, but I feel like we're friends. We talk all the time on LinkedIn. So LinkedIn has been such an amazing platform that I was actually frankly afraid of prior to, I think, like the pandemic and when I got laid off and I was all of a sudden like, oh, I'm going to go on LinkedIn and I'm going to use my voice for what I care about. And so, so I'm just so grateful to see you there, and your posts are so fantastic, so real, so authentic, which is so much what this platform is about. And I mean, you just bring it, and there's no pretenses in the way that you communicate on there. So folks, if you're, you just have to actually follow Tiffany on LinkedIn. She's fantastic.
Thank you so much for those kind words. We just have to bring our full selves. Just like I say, we want people doing that at work, right? So why not the same for social media? Show up how you want people to see you.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So Tiffany, you are CEO and founder of a consulting firm called CEPHR. So it's CEPHR, I believe. So tell us about that. Tell us about the company. Tell us about the name and what you're focusing on.
Yeah, thanks so much, Shauna. So CEPHR was born out of, I always call it my accidental project. Some people refer to it as a pandemic project. It's kind of both. I've wanted to do this for about 10 plus years, finally let go of the fear. It was the perfect time where I was taking a little break to navigate some stuff. And it just never turned off help from helping friends with some consulting work. And so now I partner with small to medium businesses in the Pittsburgh area and four other states to really help them build their infrastructures, enhance their infrastructure. So tools, systems, their performance management, engagement, making sure that they have strong cultures and teams. And we're doing a lot of work around hiring and onboarding. So making sure that that process is strong. We're doing a lot around salary benchmarking, succession planning, strategic planning, and everything in between. And it's so, so exciting. Business has been growing. I just love it. And I'm having a really good time with doing all this.
That's fantastic. I mean, and I know as we've talked about, I started SLG Impact when I did start it in the pandemic. It was very much focused on marketing solutions and brand partnerships work. And that was so hard to start a business, keep it going. And so I hand it to you, like I bow down to you for starting your pandemic project and finding that way to really flourish in it. And, you know, it's something that you're so passionate about, clearly. So talk to us a bit about like, what's been your evolution in your career and your personal side to get to where you are today as a CEO and founder?
Yeah, thanks for that invitation. I think it's been what I call a crooked career path. And I just was talking to another woman entrepreneur yesterday as we were talking about our career stories and how we kind of got here. And so for me, it took a while to crack into HR. I kind of stumbled into it, I say, because I was finding I wasn't having a good experience with the HR folks who were in my organizations at the time. I wasn't getting follow-up, the empathy, that people first you know, kind of process. And so I was like, surely there's a better way to impact the employee experience positively. And so found my way into HR, got my bachelor's, my master's, then got my HR certification, found this trucking company and got an HR assistant role. And that did not work out. I actually got fired from my very first HR job because my manager didn't like me. And after a funeral leave, no less. So I digress. But you know what? It was a tough emotional shock. I've always been a high performer, great student. And so it was like, what do you do with all that? Well, you transform. And now that's what I help my clients do. So I've been able to build into an HR generalist. I was a training coordinator in between. So taking these transferable skills and really showing people, just because I don't look like on paper the exact replica of what you're trying to do, let me show you what my potential is. And so I've been able to really leverage that and the diversity of my skills into getting an HR generalist role, into a business partner role in different segments, all different size companies, and then really into HR leadership. So it's been great and rocky, but I love that my path was not just linear, because I'm able to now demonstrate that for other folks who are struggling because they need to figure out how do I translate these skills into a role. You absolutely can do that. And so I love being a model for that for other people. And here I am now, 2 years into the making of this company. So it's been such a gift, and I just love giving back.
Oh, that's awesome. So talent's an acronym. So, right. So what does it stand for? The company?
Yeah. It's Cultivating the Evolution of Professional HR. And really that was born because I was struggling with the name and what it should be called. I didn't want my name in it. And I was like, well, how do we do this? I mean, you don't know what you're doing, and nobody really kind of tells you in the beginning. And so we're working to fix that. But so I have that as an acronym because I really believe that HR has been an evolution. We're not just rubber stamping things. We're not the policy police. Don't just call us when somebody has a visible tattoo showing and try to figure out what to do, or somebody's skirt is too short, or we're looking in corners to try to fire people, right? It's breaking down these myths that people have and showing people that HR is strategic, that we can be and are strong partners to influence the organization and culture. And so that when you talk about something that gets you out of bed and gets you going, I'm so passionate about it.
Yeah.
Because people hate HR because we get a bad rep, and some leaders and organizations are branding us as such. And I work really hard to make that not be the case and showcase all, and we're not all recruiters either. Hello, let's break down that myth too. So that is why it's an acronym.
Yeah, I'm actually so glad you brought this up, because this is something that I have long felt that HR is, that it's needed to evolve from. Again, this is my perception. I've never been in the space, but I've always worked very closely with it. Well, I mean, you know, as I've evolved as a leader myself. And I think that it's long been felt as this place where it's like, you're going to get in trouble. It's for problems. It's like, you know, roadblocks, red tape, all of those things. And let me tell you how many times I got those calls. Your staff member has a skirt that's too, like, oh my gosh, you know, and those things are course important to elements of, but again, I think that, like, you know, I've often, there was a woman, Gina Durante, who I think I tried to introduce you to her. If it didn't work yet, I'll try again. She's amazing. She was HR and finance at my old company. And she was such a great partner, and it was for me. And so, you know, I was often trying to get my staff to think of her as a resource, and like a resource, you could go and actually get help, talk through things, sounding board, all of those things. And so I'm so glad you brought that up. And, you know, I'd actually love, like, you talked about a bit of the myths, like, talk a little bit more about that. And are you starting to see any of that change in the greater landscape, or is it still feel like you're pushing a boulder up a hill?
It's that last part, but that's what evolution is, right? That's what transformation is. And you don't do yourself any favors by pretending, right? Like, I like to say, chuck those elephants out of the room. Let's get the good, the bad, the ugly out on the table and tackle it. Let's root cause it. And part of what it has been is the adversity of overcoming these negative perceptions that are out there. But we have to face that as an HR profession, because some of it, frankly, I'll be honest, and some HR people don't like when I say this, we did this to ourselves as a total profession because of some of the things we were doing. But some of that is just natural evolution, and we can't shame ourselves. I would like other folks to stop blaming us for that too. And let's talk about how we move forward, just like with anything you want solution. So I think, you know, we talked about the recruitment, like people think, oh, well, my hiring's not this. It's HR's fault, like DEI, right? Like throwing that in our lane. There's this level of understanding that has to happen and opening up transparency, because people, one, we are bound by confidentiality and ethics. And so we can't share everything. So people often see that things aren't getting done or it's not handled, but you don't always see what's behind the scenes because people can't share that. Just like you wouldn't want somebody telling your business, I can't tell you someone else's. And so there's that type of thing going on. There's also, you know, when we're not empowered as an HR team by leadership, or they think, you talked about the red tape, the bureaucracy, the roadblocks, the barriers, we're often perceived as that versus just, we're humans too. Let's just have a conversation and understand. There's so much miscommunication and silos do us no favor that I think, you know, people get this myth that, well, don't go over to HR. One, you can't trust them. They're going to tell everything, or they're only for the organization. They're only for the leadership team. When HR is done right, it's a strategic partner. It's a neutral recommending body. We're not the people who fire people. Those aren't even our decisions. We help influence the right decisions to mitigate risk. And so those are some of the things that are still happening. I do think the boulders are real big to move, but I'm up for the challenge. I love a good challenge. And I'm seeing my colleagues, the pandemic's been great that way to meet people who are like me. I never felt like a lot in HR that there were other people who thought like me, who thought outside of the box. And this whole world of HR people who are strategic and breaking down status quo just opened up like the floodgates to me during the pandemic. And it's been beautiful. So we're creating this community. We're starting to talk on LinkedIn and open up to say, this is who we are. We see comments out there that aren't true. And we're right in there, not to be like trouble starters, but like, let me help you understand. I actually have a good friend who I met because I disagreed with his comment. Like, whoa, 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 I can't let you talk about HR like that. Let me level set, right? And it's healthy to have these conversations, and we shouldn't be shying away from them. So I'll get off my soapbox because I could go on all day about this.
No, it's so great. And a couple of things that you said, and one that I actually have to remind myself is as a leader. And so I'm sure it's even tenfold, I would say, as an HR person. As a leader, I often have to remind myself that most of the staff don't know as much or have as much visibility into as much as I do because of my role. And so sometimes I have to remind myself of that in conversation because I'm just working with more information than other people are. So to your point, I can imagine how there's times when in an HR role, your thought is like not taking action, not doing this, not moving fast enough, all these things. But it's like, right, but you have so much bigger purview, and you also have boundaries that you have to abide by and within. And so it's just, so folks, as we're listening to this, it's often helpful to think about, you know, it like, what is the person in that HR seat sitting with? What are all the, you know, rather than just jumping to a conclusion about not getting heard or not seeing action, there's a lot of other factors that could take place. And I assume it could be great for you if someone said to you like, hey, what's going on here? And you might not be able to tell all the information, but you may be able to explain a bit of the boundaries and what you're working with.
Right. And that's the thing, right? And this is where some HR folks do get into trouble because they're like, you don't need to know this, or right, you don't always practice with empathy. And I'm sad to say there are still folks like that out there. We are working in the HR profession to change that too, and change those mindsets and behaviors to move us into this transformative space where we need to be for the future work. However, I think, you know, there is this piece where we have to guard that. And there has to be that the boundaries, the confidentiality that we're bound by, but you can still say, I'm not at liberty to discuss that with you. Here's what I can share. Or I can't share right now, but we will have more information coming, but you have to tell people something. And I think, leaders sometimes think, well, I can't tell them that. And so they say nothing. And I see it all the time. And they're like, well, we don't know. And the leaders are like, well, we can't tell you that, or we're not ready to tell them. I'm like, you got to tell them something. Yes. Otherwise it looks like you're hiding something, and that you don't want.
No, it's so true. And, you know, I often have that, whether it's in my position with my staff or, you know, with clients, because where I would rather tell them, I don't have that information for you right now. I'm working to get it by this time frame, rather than say nothing, because I often feel that like that silence, that absence of acknowledgement is where people's monkey minds start. We all start to invent responses, invent situations. And then it's like, it's just human nature, you know? And so I love that you shared that. And again, I think as people are listening, depending on what area of business you work in, there can be a responsibility on both sides, you know? And again, it's like, I would imagine in that HR seat, it's to be able to like fill in some gaps for people so they're not left wondering. But then also if they're not in that seat, you know, if you are wondering, we can also ask, hey, can you give me a little bit more information, or are you not able to say anything because X, Y, and Z? And, but again, that's where there's like that trusted dialogue, thinking of that person in that HR environment as an ally. As I loved how you called it a neutral, which it like a neutral place. Yeah. To come. I mean, you said better than I did, but
yeah, neutral recommending body. But it's like that safe space. It's trust, yeah, and grace is what we need to have. And it has to happen on both sides. We all know that any relationship requires that. There's a foundation of trust that has to happen. And it's no different in the workplace versus a spouse or a friendship, right? We all have to build that and kind of be in the space where we work at it together, because it doesn't work in silos, just like the workplace doesn't.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. So we talked about some of these misperceptions. But I'm also curious, these are obviously challengers. Like I mentioned, like they're boulders that you're pushing up a hill, but earlier we were talking about the pandemic, and we've seen so much in the pandemic from that I'm sure has just been like hitting HR people like a ton of bricks. I mean, it's hitting me like as a leader, like a ton of bricks. The, you know, the pandemic layoff, I was laid off, to, you know, the great resignation. Now we see like people are calling it the great rescinding. There's, you know, salaries all over the place. Now we have layoffs again. And like, I mean, so you're just being hit on all sides with these challenges. And so talk to us a bit about what it's been like navigating these things, and, you know, how are you handling it? And how are you, you know, finding these ways? Because we're all actually learning as we're going. Nobody has the answers.
Yeah. And that's one thing that I love hearing you say that and in such vulnerability and candor as a leader, because so many times our egos get in the way, or we're afraid to say we don't know something, or that it feels icky because it's uncertain. That we got to just get at that, like get at that feeling, share it with your teams. We're not like superhumans, like we're all going to feel this way. And so I love that you hit on that. And it has been challenging. I was a client, had a team building event last week, and one of the principals sat down with me and was like, how are you kind of navigating this? Your business is growing, you know, how do you know when too much is too much and control it? And we had this beautiful conversation just as business owners. And it was cool to hear him talk about it and give me a little advice. And then he was saying, you know, we never meant for you to be our like COVID point of contact, but you've helped us so much. And that meant so much to me, because we are burning out. 98% is the percentage of HR folks who are burned out. I've been through 3 rounds of it. It is tough. And when you're, this is how I started my business, because I was kind of at this place where I wanted to take a sabbatical in HR for just a couple months, see if I can help some people out while I looked for a traditional role. And then it just never turned off. But once I was kind of already at that place, and then the pandemic hit, and it was like, whoa, I need a break. It was fast, furious. Laws, regs were changing. Leadership had to make kind of all these offsites, and all these things are coming at you as a leader. And being an HR leader at the time was like, whoa, pump the brakes. It was a lot, and it never has turned off. We've seen people get positive cases. How do we do that? What are the policies and procedures we need to keep people safe? How do we make sure that that's communicated, and that when everything changes or the county transmission levels change, there's, I never meant to be checking something so often during a week. I feel like HR people sometimes say, I'm a scientist, I'm an HR practitioner, I'm a counselor. We wear all these hats, and it trains you, even when you're trying to, because you're everything to everyone at almost every time. And it's a lot, especially then you add being an entrepreneur and a solopreneur as a consultant, helping other folks while you're navigating all of it yourself in your own business and with multiple clients, what magnifies the effect. But what I will say is the pandemic, it kept me agile. Right now, we talked about the fact that I'm on this phone right now because my computer decided to just be like, we're done. And I'm like, hey, we're working from the phone then until this tech can come get it fixed. But that, I might've felt differently had it not been the pandemic. We have to pivot. We have to be always adaptable. And if you did not learn to deal with uncertainty and be adaptable in these 2+ years, you learn nothing. And so it's been a wild ride, but we're still navigating it. We're still figuring it out. People are still learning lessons and taking those lessons to say, hey, I want to get better feedback from my teams because I thought I knew stuff, but the pandemic has taught me that. So I love watching organizations use the lessons versus just, all right, come on back to the office. We're going to do what we were doing before. And maybe that is where you need to be, but let's think about it and think about it for the future, not just because that's what we've always done. Because that will chew you up and spit you out, and your competitors will take your employees.
Oh my goodness. Real talk. Yeah, exactly. We have all seen that. No, I'm so glad you hit on all these topics. I think one, I was actually meant to mention at the beginning, Tiffany was an absolute champ, folks. So in coming to this recording today, because she had the whole like computer explode, I was like, oh yeah, half the time I feel like technology's out to get me. So thank you again for making this work of your phone. You know, but it's so true. And I remember my first leader and mentor, and she's actually a founding partner of podcast, Felicia Hall Allen. That was her biggest lesson to me. And my first year with her was like, girl, you better be more adaptable. And so I think that's always rang true with me. And that's so what you said, it's like more than ever in these past couple of years, we need to be adaptable. Other things that you've talked about during this call about like grace and empathy. And I think that sometimes we look to people who are leaders, we look to HR as like expecting people to have all the answers. And sometimes it's like, we need to meet ourselves with grace, but we also need to meet people in those seats with grace, understanding that like, we are all figuring this stuff out. And hopefully we have people in those seats who are doing it with intentionality and really trying to work with people and get input from people. And so it's not in this, you know, top down bureaucratic way, but like, we're also all going to make mistakes along the way. And, you know, I mean, and sometimes that can be really hard as a leader because, you know, you want to do it right. You want to, you know, and so, but actually I think, so the president and one of the owners of CMD, Kevin Thomas, he says quite often, he's just, I love it. He's vulnerable in that he'll say like, I'm going to make a mistake. And, you know, it's like, again, we can't always expect perfection out of these, you know, these type of folks. And, you know, I'm so glad to hear all the work you're doing in HR. I think it also brings a bit of humanity, which you would expect in human resources, but I think it's not always there, and it's not always perceived that it's there.
Yeah, 100%. I think, you know, people hear these words like vulnerability, empathy, and they're like, oh, here we go, psychological safety. I talk about that a lot. I gotta give this shout out to Timothy R. Clark. That man is very human. And I was like, oh my gosh, he's in my DMs. I've been following you. It was interesting. I commented on a post and then I was like, it's like Dr. Psychological Safety. I just nerd out on this stuff because the workplace needs to be human. There is an intersection between our life and our work, and they don't just separate people used to say, check that at the door, don't bring it in. No, bring it in. That's what makes you you. And leaders and organizations embrace that. That is diversity. When we so often look for diversity in what we look like, what we sound like, what school we went to, all those like what I call superficial factors. And I mean, not it's great. Who we are, what we look like is very important.
Yeah.
And so I'm not implying that, right? But just we focus on the wrong things is where I'm going with that. And so we hear these words and people are like, oh, it's so fluffy, or where's the value in that? The value in psychological safety is that your folks feel like they can show up to work. They feel like they can trust you. They feel like they're paid fairly, that they can bring their ideas and their full selves. Now you're going to engage them. Now you're going to retain them. If you don't do those things and you want to call psychological safety just fluffy, well, prepare to lose your folks. And that's what's going to happen. And people think that's, I think there's a little bit of people thinking that's a myth, but it's not. And that's why we've seen the great resignation. And I've had times where I've tried to say, I don't know if you want to go that route, but again, recommending body, I don't tell my clients what to do, co-create it. And all mine are great and they don't have turnover issues. But I'm saying the folks who didn't follow those kind of guidelines or didn't learn the lessons from the pandemic are the ones who are losing their folks in droves, or they're worse. They have people who are just there and they're just coasting, and maybe they're not coasting. They're not even performing. And that's not a good space to be either. Because how do you think they're interfacing with their customers? They're not bringing their A game. That's for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's so true. And something I picked up along the way in a former role, because I often saw this, was like, we are not robots. We are humans who bring, you know, if we ask someone to bring their whole self to work, if we ask someone to bring their like creativity, their hard work, all of those things, we're, you know, it's not like someone can bring only like a portion of themselves, you know? And I think I actually saw it in some of the people that I was leading, like when they could come and be their whole selves, whether it was, you know, for some people it was very much, they could be out, you know, as part of the LGBTQ community, or, you know, and then I saw such a transformation, in like, I'm thinking of a particular staff member who just could flourish when she was absolutely being her whole self. And so, you know, I think that's something that's so important that we have to remember, especially as leaders, and just also as just staff members, like that we have to keep that in mind about the importance of that, and that you can't really just cut it off and be robotic and still, you know, be sort of like, again, like your highest performing self. So I'm so glad that you brought that up. But, and also like in a tangential way, I actually had wanted to talk to you about when we're facing so many things, like, you know, whether it was George Floyd being murdered, whether it was, you know, the most recent Roe versus Wade overturning. And there's such a, it's such a dynamic that goes on in the workplace, but then you often have people that are like, don't talk about it at work. Don't talk about it on LinkedIn. When I see people on LinkedIn chastising other people, policing other people, I'm just like, ah, you know, it's really hard, because again, it's like people need to be able, and I guess we all have to do it in, I guess, appropriately. And I don't really know, I'm not the appropriate police. But I just think that there's an element of like, it doesn't really work to say, don't bring it here, or it doesn't belong here. Or like all of a sudden say, oh, well, you're politicizing something. And you're like, that's human rights, folks. And so I would just love for you to talk about that, because it is a suffocating struggle that so many people are facing.
Ooh, I love the way you described it. It's so accurate, and it puts such teeth into it to say it's a suffocating struggle, because even the Friday series that Suman and I host, the diversity series, was created out of this. People are coming in with this suffocating struggle. I might've been crying an hour before work, and now I got to show up to this meeting and talk about financials or my project. I'm not thinking about that. And how am I going to show up as my best self when you're just burning through an agenda and you haven't even checked in with me or set aside 2 minutes to say, are you okay? Can you proceed? Can this wait? We've not paused enough, and we just want to burn to the day. And all this heavy stuff, we have all these shootings and people being targeted. Those people look like the people, I hope, if you have a diverse background, it's not just to say like skin color or race, gender, all of that. but those folks are represented in community into your workplace, I hope. And they're humans, or they know people who may be impacted. And so we have to have more empathy in the workplace. These are big decisions. You don't know, unless you know your folks, what they're going through. Something like a Roe v. Wade reversal, like that impacted tons of people, and not just people identify as women. Men felt it. We, again, you know, people, they have wives who have gone through miscarriages. People have family backgrounds. There's so much trauma and so many things that happen. We can't, like you said, we're not robots. So we can't just come in and be like, oh, that's too political. And back in the day, I remember as an HR person being told like, oh no, they can't talk about that. We don't talk about politics at work. There was like this list of things you couldn't talk about. And I'm so glad to see that changing too, because that's just not the case anymore. And it shouldn't be. And sometimes it's out of this fear where people are like, well, I'm not a person of color. I don't know how to talk about that. It's not my place to talk about it. Well, back to what you said before, that silence can be destructive. To not say anything sends another message, right? So we have to have conversations, and we got to start bringing these in, because this is impacting your employees' lives. And that goes right into engagement, support, leadership, retention. And people don't always connect the dots that way in a strategic manner.
Yeah, it's so true. And I think, you know, this audience has leaders of all ages. And, you know, we have a Next Gen episode that we put out. And I think like there's times when these very explosive things happen in society. And sometimes I believe, and I'm curious your thoughts on this, is like, I can't leave it up to HR to be the only one who says something. And so for me, like, I talk about suffocating the Roe v. Wade, you know, overturning day, and it was hard to focus. It was hard to show up for calls. It was hard to do all these things. And I just felt really compelled to address my staff, but I was also really, really aware that I didn't want to assume that everybody had the same feeling or same viewpoint, but I couldn't be silent. And I felt that I, as a leader, needed to be present for people, or somehow acknowledge or give space, or to your point, like allow people to take a pause. And so I'm just curious, like, what are your, and I did end up writing to my folks in a very, I worked really hard crafting just to try to be, you know, open with it, but also be present for people. But I think it is an element of like, we can't always say, oh, well, that's HR has to do that. I think as leaders, again, leaders of all ages, there is an element that with awareness and intentionality, we can also contribute to being human, being present, being empathetic, all of those things. So I'm just curious, like, what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah. And thanks for being such an amazing leader. This is one of the reasons I've become fast friends, and I love talking to you, because you bring all that, and people need to see human leaders. People trust human leaders. People will stay with human leaders and do their best work and outperform the expectations for human leaders. And so just shout out to you, lady, for all you do and for your team. And I know they felt so supported by you showing up for them that way. And the process you just described is exactly what I'm talking about. Check in on folks as humans, carve out some time in the agenda, send that note to say, I get it. I will set aside separate time for my regular one-on-one. Like, I am here, I'm accessible, I'm visible. And so those things are so, so important. But I think, you know, as you say that, it's like people do expect HR to do it, or we want to play good cop, bad cop, and we want to be like, HR told me to do this. This is because of this. Really, you're just making yourself look bad as a leader, because you're showing that you're not showing up for your folks, or it looks like you're not confident, or you diminish your own role. And part of my role is to help you shine as a leader. But some people just, it's like, help me help you, because you're your own barrier. And I have seen that at times. So a lot of the role is coaching as well.
Yeah, that's a really interesting point, is that it's probably very helpful when you have leaders within an organization that are, they're showing the example of working with HR as teammates, and that instead of it being that good cop, bad cop, which I definitely see happen, where it's like, if we're a united front, and doesn't mean that we're always in agreement, there may be things that, but you can also agree to disagree and find a way to still be work together. But that's a really good, and I hadn't really thought of that before preparing for this, but there are times when we as leaders intentionally or unintentionally make HR the bad guys and gals.
Yeah. And I love that you had the grace and empathy to say unintentionally. And part of what I practice and approach in leadership is that not everything happens on purpose. A lot of mistakes that get made and biases, assumptions are unintentional. And we got to roll with that too. We have to learn from our mistakes. And we on both sides have to have this grace of maybe they didn't mean to do it. We shouldn't assume that somebody meant to do it. It's like assume positive intent, and maybe you'll discover that it wasn't, maybe it was intentional, but you don't know until you get there, because with our assumptions comes bias, and that is problematic. You can lend yourself into harassment and discriminatory issues when you do that, or just like not being a good human. So we just have to be compassionate with each other.
Yeah, that's really great that you said that. It also kind of triggered me. Also, when you were talking earlier about all the various things that you bring to your to work every day because of all the tools that you have in your toolbox from your evolution of your career. And I think that's also important for us to remember that people in HR seats have a lot of experiences that aren't just to HR. So it reminds, so I'm thinking of it because just, I think it was earlier this week. So there's a woman in HR who leads the HR practice at CMD, Paula Ordway, who, I've been working with her as partners and teammate. And, sometimes I'll go to her and it was something about positioning something to a client. And because she has a really great way of thinking of things and positioning it. And she's also thinking, how would the other person perceive it? So, and it was funny because someone was like, why'd you ask her? And then I was like, well, because of these things, and again, yes, of course I go to her for HR things, but, again, it's just, I recognize that she brings these other skills. She has other tools in her toolbox that I actually find helpful in a lot of ways. So that's just, I'm saying this as folks are listening to this, just something that I've learned as I've gone on, and I've been able to lean into it even more in the past couple of years being at CMD. So I just want to share it.
Oh my gosh, but that's so powerful. I always talk about loving a good curious question, powerful perspective, and powerful share. And that was just perfect. Because people need to hear that. That's the strategic piece, right? That's the partnership. And we have these HR business partners. And sometimes we put people in those roles, but they're not really partners because you don't trust them. You don't want to share information about the business. As good partners, we need to understand your business. That's how we best support you. That's how we make strategic plays. And so it's so interesting that you said that. And I love that story. I hope folks listen to that and learn a lesson, because that in and of itself is diversity, gaining new perspectives, pulling the right people around the table, stakeholders, getting a new perspective, because we all only have so many perspectives. And I love, love, love that you just made my entire day.
No, well, you triggered it by what you said, but you also talked about psychological safety, which I want to touch on for a minute, which I think is so important. And again, I think it's important as I look at what I perceive is in the HR space. And I say that carefully because I don't want to make assumptions I've never actually sat in the space, as I've said before, but I also think it's important as leaders. And a lot of times when I pull teams together, I really focus on my intention is for it to be a safe space for people, because I was actually, I'm going to do a tangential story for a second. Sorry. So my uncle, who is, he's in his late 80s now. He and I have become really close in the last 10 to 15 years. And he's a psychiatrist. And I was with him and my dad about a year or so ago, and where he's sitting there with his cigar and his glass of whatever. And we were talking, and I was asking him because I think a lot of times just the wisdom that someone like that and a person who's lived so many experiences can share with us. And I asked him, what does he think it is some of the most, like the most important thing that humans and staff are looking for in work. And I was asking him through the lens of a psychiatrist, like, what is he thinking? And I literally have written it down and I keep it on my desk. So I wasn't planning on this, but I just thought you triggered this too, is, and he said to me, is safety and a sense of control. And when he explained that he didn't mean control as in controlling, but for the last 2 years, we just have had everything constantly upended, and I don't see it changing anytime soon. And so one of the things that we as humans are struggling so much with is feeling a lack of safety around us and feeling a lack of people around us able to control, and us having a little control in what we're doing and what we're navigating. And so it just, I think we were talking about this earlier about like mental health is so important at this time, and being able to make space for people and acknowledge those things. And so again, I'm saying this in general for like leaders of companies, no matter what age you are, also HR, I think these are just such important things first to keep in mind. You know, a lot of times I have these little self checks that I do, and it's like, okay, Roe versus Wade overturning day. Holy shit. Talk about safety and control being blown up. So I don't know. I just kind of wanted to share it. And I think that that element of mental health and safe spaces is really important.
Thank you for bringing that up. And it's something that we have to continue to normalize. Mental health in general, I'm very open about some of the struggles that I've had, and depressions because of life events, depression because of work events. We all, you know, are prone to at times imposter syndrome, and some people don't like that term, but we got to call things what they are. And I appreciate your candor and just being so real and authentic all the time. And that's one of the things that bonded us and made us really quick friends. But I love this sense of control. And as soon as you said it, I knew exactly where you were going with that, because that is that piece of psychological safety. And there are different elements to that. If we feel like we're losing that, we're more prone to start to, you know, have mood shifts, or it can impact our mindset, or we might get more defensive or territorial. We might feel like someone's trying to take our job or step on our toes, or that's not your lane, stay in your lane, or just hold to things because it's all we have. And so I love that, but it can be healthy to have that, just like fear, but it can also be a trap in some ways. It's how you manage it. But we all, to some degree, want to have some level of control because it brings about some of that safety. So thank you for bringing that, that wisdom in from your wise uncle.
Oh, he's amazing. I appreciate that. And I also appreciate like what you're talking about. For me, I've also been really open with that. My own struggles with anxiety and you know, imposter syndrome and all of those things. And again, we're all human. We're all trying to make it. And I think the more we're able to own it and be real about it, then, you know, then the less we feel like we have to like be ashamed of something or keep something secret or hide something. And again, it all circles back to like being your authentic self. And, you know, and I think, again, it's like, I often also talk about the difference between intention and perception. And I think that can be, that's why a lot of times I will literally say like, my intention in this is this, and that I'm hoping that you're perceiving it this way, or I'll pause and I'll ask like, how did that land? Or, you know what I mean? And I think that, again, it's that element of recognizing that to a large degree, again, especially lately, there's such a struggle for feeling of safety and feeling of like just a loss of control in the world. It feels like there's like the world is like this train gone off the tracks, you know? And it's also like, because part of that anxiety for me flares up was like, what's the next thing that's gonna hit, you know? And so, you know, that's again why I think I personally feel it's really important to have this sort of ecosystem in a working environment where people can be like, I can breathe, I can trust, you know?
Yeah. People need to come to work and have it have, you know, a negative environment or something that destroys them. I often describe my work is supporting and making sure that people aren't getting ruined in their employee experience. And so if work is another thing, right? Like this world, every time you turn around, something's happening, and we all feel all of it on some level, unless there are some bots out there. I just think it's, you know, we have to show up in authenticity, and we have to intention set, as you said. I was talking about like building intentional cultures, intention setting, when you're trying to build your leadership brand, your organizational brand, your employer brand, it's so important. And so you doing that, you asking those curious questions and making sure that people are perceiving the message that was as it was intended is important. And if it's not, I know you're going to talk about it. You're not going to shy away from it. And that's, you know, I wish we could clone you as a leader.
No, I'm really happy and grateful to be have this, you know, whole conversation. And I also appreciate just how free flowing it's been. And so actually I was also starting thinking, like, you talked about that you work with companies, mid-sized companies, small to mid-size in the Philadelphia area. And you said four other states, but like our audience is across the country. And so I would love for, in the time we have left, I have some more questions for you, but I'd love to pause for a minute and talk about, like, how can the people think of who are listening, if they're like, I want more of what this woman's bringing to the table. And it's like, how can they tap into Sefer? How can they tap into Tiffany? Is it only like, who are you for? Who are you not for? What are the kind of the services that you offer? If you can speak to that a little bit, I would love that. I'm over here like, I want more of this lady.
Thank you. I appreciate it. I am very active on LinkedIn, which is how we met, and how the beautiful world has opened up to me over the last couple of years being active on there. So get on social media, connect. Community is a strong value for me. So LinkedIn, you can find me on my website at www.sefferconsulting.com. Those are probably the best ways to get in touch. And you can find all the other ways to get in touch with me too. So there's only really three areas that I don't focus on at Sefer, and that's recruitment, payroll, and benefits. So I'm great. HR network, partner network, would love to refer you. So if you do come to me and it's not that, I won't leave you hanging. I'll put you in good hands. But really, it's everything that could be impacted by your culture, whether that's your hiring, onboarding, you need to have a handbook, you want to understand how you get better performance metrics, how you get the most out of your team, maybe you're facing some employee relations issues, you want to come up with a strategic plan and connect that in, and you know, assess your talent and do good benchmarking and succession planning. I can help you with all those things and everything in between. You want to find some new software solutions? I actually love demos and doing that. So I've helped one client do that three times, which is amazing. So just, you know, I've always prided myself on being very versatile, and I get to learn in the process too. And that's a lesson that I would give to your audience, to say, always be learning. No matter what it is, always be in a seat of a learner versus a teller. And so that's really important. But yeah, those are a lot of the things that I love to do. And as you said, I practice, my business is headquartered in Pittsburgh here, but I also support clients across the US, and maybe that'll change to other places in the world.
Yeah, exactly.
But right now, US based.
Okay, great. So so when you were talking, I got this thing that I wanted to ask you that I forgot about, which is, if someone I'm super curious about what your answer to this is going to be, which is, if someone comes to you and says, I want you to help create my culture, what is, like, that comes a bit to, like, can you create culture? Does it happen naturally? Is it the things that you do that then the culture is manifested by the way that you support the people? Like, what's your thought about that? Because I think sometimes people, like, have all these different perceptions around how a culture is created. So is there, and that's a huge topic that could be a whole episode itself, but can you give us a snippet about what's your thoughts about culture?
Yeah, and it's one of the ways that I do help people, right? But there is, I always describe it as, you know, who are you aspiring to be? How do you want to be seen as a leader, as an employer brand? How are your folks showing up for you as brand ambassadors on social media, on Glassdoor, all things of that nature? What are people saying about you? How does it feel to work there? Are you living out values? And I always connect it back to mission, vision, values, because that's where you start. how do you, and I worked with one client a couple of years ago, and they were reinventing that with their team as to what does this look like? We feel like this isn't, you know, our core mission is the same, but how do we take this to the next level? And we feel like this isn't maybe who we are. So it is living. Your culture is a living, dynamic thing. And if you think that, oh, it's just set, we're going to do this. Nope, that's not going to fly. Okay. It's not going to fly with your stakeholders internally or externally. And so it's, I describe it as a feeling. What does it feel like to be here? What's the experience? What is the experience that you're creating? And so through a tool or a system or a lack of career development, role clarity, you create an experience. So what do you want that to look like? How do you want people to see their careers? How do you want people to see how you're practicing diversity, equity, inclusion, and belonging? That is part of the experience. So the process that I take my clients through often is, tell me where you are now. Let me learn about your business, what it's all about. Because my clients in any industry, you're a good match for me. I'm industry agnostic. And I've always practiced that way over the last 14 years in HR. So no matter what your industry is, who are you aspiring to be? What are you doing now? What's not serving you? And you have to identify what's not serving you. We can't just put it in the corner and talk it away. And who do you want to be? What's the vision? Tell me the vision. What I do is take all of that, and it's like a pie that we're going to bake, and it's going to be delicious at the end, because we're going to see, we're going to put the filling in, and we're going to make it all sugary and sweet and figure it out. It's that middle piece, what I often refer to as the messy middle, but that's where we get down to brass tacks. That's where we discover we're going to root cause. What are your people saying? What are they telling you? What data are you pulling in and pulling from to really get there? And so it's getting them, you know, helping them with risks and recommendations, certainly, but to understand, you know, what pieces they may not know, and giving them some other things to consider, which is just powerful. And it becomes this key that unlocks creativity and innovation in the leaders that I work with. And it is the thing that lights me up all the time, because then they go and they ask their employees if they're not doing it. So it's just a great thing. I would say anyone who's open to learning, you have to be coachable. You have to not want to ruin your employees. If so, no shade, but please don't call me, because I don't work with those folks. I don't work with toxic people. I've worked in those workplaces, and no, please stay away from me.
Same. No, it's so true. And so you mentioned earlier, and then you just said, you just referenced DEI, diversity, equity, inclusion, and belonging. And I love that part, which I've noticed people are talking about more and more. So you said earlier that people try to put that in the HR lane. So I just want to, so that is best not in the HR lane. That is its own discipline and area of the business, correct?
Sometimes, but in my approach, it's baked into, I have some clients where that's all we're working on, right? Okay. Like that's our lane, because they're solid in other things they're doing. My approach is everything we do, everything is baked into who I am as my background. So it serves me both personally and professionally. I care about it. I'm passionate. Everything I look at and touch for a client and in my life in general is going to be from that lens. So it needs to be baked into everything, which is why we find struggles or check the box performative when we don't put action behind it, because people are just trying to solve for one thing. I need more women. I need more Latinas. Okay, what else? Where's the strategy behind that? If you don't have a strategy, just like engagement and everything else, it's going to fail. We have to start somewhere. But if you then bring someone who is Latina or who is a woman into the workplace, but they don't feel like they're welcome or belong, or their ideas are heard, they can't rise in the ranks, well, now you're disengaging me and I'm going to leave anyway. So what is the point? You have to do it right. HR can certainly help support it in some organizations. This is why your organizational structure and strategically, you need to think about what that looks like, because does it live in the HR space? And if yes, do they have the tools and resources? Do they have a budget to manage that? Do they have the right team? Otherwise, you know, and leaders should own this too. We all own culture. We all own diversity, equity, inclusion, belonging. And it's not just the leader's job either. Employees dictate that too. They help shape the culture.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much for touching on that. It's a It's clearly something that I'm it's a little of a hot button for me. So we are running out of time because only out of respect for you, because I would just keep going and going and going. But so I'm going to give you to close out, I'm going to give you two options. And one is starting this new thing where it's like SLG impact, like speed round. So if you had five tips, doesn't have to be five, three to five tips that are key takeaways that you want us to know about, knowing that you've got leaders on this of all ages, that we can really think about that would help us to help evolve and create positive impact with people and brands that we're touching. So that's one that are just, you know, again, just like five tips in general, or a takeaway that you want to leave people with. From like one takeaway that you want to leave people with for this episode?
Yeah, I do love insights, and I feel like it's, you know, I want to leave people with more already. Sure. There's a great Jay Danzi quote about, you know, how do you want people to experience you? And so I always think about that. But I would say in terms of the tips, it's, you know, give grace to yourself and to your teams. Don't be infallible and make sure that you're agile. I would say be a safe space and create that trust and foundation. Always be understanding that there's more that can be improved. That is definitely something that I would say. And be reviewing your processes and knowing your team so that you can always be in that space of exploration and improving the employee experience.
Amazing. Amazing. Folks, she is the queen over here. I love, love, love talking with you. I couldn't be more grateful that we're friends and we're on the journey together. And I appreciate learning from you. So everybody have an amazing day. Tiffany, go shine that light on others. Keep doing amazing work. Your impact is incredible. So thank you so much and have an awesome day.